97.5 The Fanatic.
Pleasant Sunday afternoon to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe and happy and healthy. And welcome to 97.5 The Fanatic. The number, as always, to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. I am Tyler Zulli. We take you until 8 o'clock today. Matt Menark is with us for the duration of the program. We will speak to Matt in just a moment. Great show today by our guys Hunter Brody and Mike Vito as they took you from 12 until 4 o'clock today. And we will wrap up today's festivities as the weekend comes to a close. We do have a four-hour run, a full four-hour run, and a ton to get into today, so why don't we jump right into things? I have to be honest with you. It's kind of a crummy day to be a Phillies fan. I won't lie. I'm disappointed. I know you are, too. I'm sure Matt is, and I know that I spoke to Hunter and Mike before they left. They're both a little bummed out. It is a difficult weekend as a Phillies fan because of course, the broken thumb of Bryce Harper. Now, we knew that Bryce Harper was eventually going to need to get surgery for the UCL damage that he has in his throwing arm, and that was going to happen at some point. It has to. And when you get that surgery, you are bound to miss time. Even if you do it at the very beginning of the offseason, the likelihood is that you probably will not be fully ready for the start of the next season. That just is what it is. But we understood that even with that, the beauty and the sorrow of the UCL injury for Bryce Harper is that Major League Baseball evidently picked a really good year to have a universal DH. And despite the fact that Bryce Harper was not going to be able to play in the field for the remainder of the season or until he fully recovers from the UCL surgery that he's absolutely going to need at some point, he was able to stay in the lineup on a nightly basis because of the designated hitter in both leagues, now the universal DH. And it was great. And quite frankly, despite the fact that he hadn't played in the field since, what was it, early May, late April, whatever the case was, that the last time he stepped foot on the outfield grass, the reality was that Bryce Harper was still an MVP candidate because of the fact that he was absolutely tearing the cover off the baseball, and he was actually hitting at a better clip than he was when you average things out than he did a season ago. He reached an RBI total in the early portions of June that he didn't reach last year until I believe late July or maybe even early August. The reality was that despite the fact that this defense was inept to begin with and you were losing one of your better defensive outfielders and forcing Nick Castellanos to be in the outfield every single day and forcing Kyle Schwarber to be in the outfield every single day, the offense was going to stay intact because of the fact that you had the universal DH. And that was a beautiful thing. That was the beauty and the sorrow. Now, with the broken thumb, and the Phillies have used the term that everybody dreads. The term that everybody dreads is indefinitely. And he was put on the 10-day IL today, but the reality is it's probably going to be a much longer stint than that. I know that there's not any total confirmation as to if or when he is going to need surgery on that thumb. I know that there's not any total confirmation on the longevity of the time that he is going to miss, but the reality is I expect, and I think a lot of us expect, a long timetable for a return because of the broken thumb. Now you start to have the conversation about should he just be shut down for the entirety of the season once you figure out how long in reality he is going to miss with the thumb, shut him down for the rest of the season, get both surgeries done at one time, not at the same time, of course, but at one time, and he will miss the rest of the season, but he may be ready to go by the beginning of next season. You have to have that conversation. It's not a conversation that any of us wanted to have. And we have to start having that conversation. But we'll hold off on that for now. Because I think that that conversation is going to come much sooner than we would have liked to have had that conversation. Because I think you're going to understand what the extent of the thumb injury is in a few days' time. But the conversation that we need to have today has nothing to do with shutting Bryce Harper down, has nothing to do with when or if the 2021 MVP is going to return to the lineup in some capacity. Because that's a conversation, like I said, that we're going to need to have soon, but not quite just yet. The conversation that we need to have today surrounds everybody else on the 26-man roster. And in particular, the other eight hitters who are in the lineup on a nightly basis. And whomever is going to shift to become the DH and that ninth guy that steps into that role. I would expect to start at least the designated hitter for the bulk of the next week is going to be Nick Castellanos. Get him out of the field. You'll see a mixture of Mickey Moniak, Odubel Herrera, mixture of a whole bunch of different guys. Matt Vierling. You will see a bunch of different guys in right field, a bunch of different guys in center field as they try to figure out what the best combination is between defensive efficiency or avoiding defensive deficiency and what gives you the most productivity in the lineup on a nightly basis. With all that being said, with the fact that this team is going to have to figure this thing out, with the fact that it feels like you're going to have to duct tape and spit and bubble gum this thing together for the remainder of the season, in actuality, I don't believe that to be the case. Yes, you are losing an MVP caliber player. You now have an MVP type hole in the middle of your lineup that cannot be replaced. You cannot replace a player of the caliber offensively of Bryce Harper. Much like the San Diego Padres are going to struggle offensively to replace or are not going to be able to replace Manny Machado as he misses time. The St. Louis Cardinals would not be able to replace Paul Goldschmidt if he were to miss time. The New York Yankees, well, maybe the New York Yankees could because they've been unbelievable despite the fact that they didn't get a hit for 16 consecutive innings. But the New York Yankees would have a difficult time and maybe an unreasonable time trying to replace Aaron Judge if he were to miss time. The reality is you do not replace a player of Bryce Harper's caliber. You simply do not. But you can fill voids with other players. And you can, I don't want to say moneyball this thing together because this team has spent a lot of money, but you can get proficiency and efficiency from multiple guys in order to fill as best as you can the void that was left by an MVP contender and the guy that won the MVP a season ago. So, with all of that being said, I know we are glum. I know that this feels like that the sky is falling, and for those that were waiting for the other shoe to drop, honestly, I hate you right now. This is, I don't really want to talk to you, but I understand that this is the format to do so. However, with all of that being said, the Phillies have an obligation because of the fact that even if you take Bryce Harper's $30-plus million salary off the payroll, the Phillies have an obligation to continue to strive for playoff success because this team still, even without Bryce Harper, for however long that he is missing, still has $200 million paid out to its lineup or paid out to its roster this season. This team is paying big money to JT Realmuto. It is paying big money to Nick Castellanos. It is paying big money to Kyle Schwarber. It is on the precipice of paying big money to Rhys Hoskins should they decide to sign him to a long-term deal. It is paying adequate money to Didi Gregorius. This team is constructed in such a way that while it is impossible to fill the void of an MVP player in Bryce Harper, it is also constructed in a way to not falter, to not fall, to not go down the rabbit hole of lack of success just because your MVP candidate is out of the lineup for a particular amount of time. It is not going to be easy. We all know that. They know that. Bryce Harper knows that. It is not going to be easy for this team to fill the void that he is going to leave. With that being said, I cannot and I refuse to accept this team rolling over and dying because one player is out of the lineup. As I made mention, San Diego has missed Manny Machado for an extended period of time. The New York Mets continue to succeed despite the fact that Jacob DeGrom has been on the IL for a long, long stretch of time. This team cannot falter simply because it is missing an MVP candidate. And again, I understand that it is incredibly impossible to fill a void that he leaves. But I cannot use that as an excuse for this team to falter down the stretch. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. I understand that this team has struggled without Bryce Harper in the lineup this season. I believe that they are 2-9 without Bryce Harper in the batting order in some capacity this season. And I believe they've been shut out in 3 or 4 of those 9 losses. It's not an ideal situation. Much like it is not an ideal situation for the Padres to be missing Manny Machado, or if the Cardinals were to miss Paul Goldschmidt or Nolan Arenado, or if the Guardians were to lose out on, why am I blanking on their shortstop's name? He's absolutely raking this season. And my brain is totally going to mush here. Jose Ramirez, third baseman, excuse me, I didn't mean to say shortstop, third baseman. If the Guardians were to lose out on Jose Ramirez, it is impossible to fill that role. But you can't crumble because that role is unfillable. You need to patchwork this thing together. And it can't even be patchwork because of the fact that you have a $200 million payroll, sans Bryce Harper, and you brought all these guys in to give you offensive efficiency. JT Realmuto needs to step up. Nick Castellanos needs to step up. Kyle Schwarber needs to continue to hit the baseball at a strong level. Rhys Hoskins has been very, very hot over the last month. I need to see him continue to be productive. I'm going to need productivity from Alec Boehm. I'm going to need something, not a lot, but something from Bryson Stott and whomever plays the shortstop position or whomever plays the second base position, whichever way Bryson Stott is going to play on an individual basis with Didi Gregorius and with Johan Camargo. It's going to be difficult, but it is not impossible. I got a text from my dad today. And my dad texted me, all it said was, RIP Philly season. And I strongly disagree. This is not the guy you want to lose. But this team is built to have success offensively, even without Bryce Harper. It won't be the same, but it can still work. And again, the number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. And with that, we'll welcome our second member of the program into today's show. That would be our producer, Matt Menarik. First and foremost, Matt, good afternoon. And I know that this is a little bit of a glum way for us to meet once again. But I truly believe that despite the fact that this team is it's going to miss its best player for certain, no doubt about it. It should be constructed in such a way that others can step up, other veterans can step up in his presence and not fill the void, but at least make it palatable.
First, good afternoon to you as well, Tyler. I'm glad you had a good few days off on a trip with your wife. And I completely agree with you. This is a huge, big loss for the Phillies. But the way they're constructed, they should be able to sustain some success. They went out and signed Schwarber. They went out and signed Castellanos. They're supposed to be the ones to step up and everybody else on the team to step up and keep the ball rolling. Now, I know that mentally this is going to be a big a downer for the Phillies. Today's not going to be an example of how they're going to go. If they're inspired and they come out here and win 10-0 against the Padres, that's not going to tell you how the rest of the season is going to go. It's going to be how sustainable this is going to be, and if those guys that we expect to step up actually step up, because as you said, one of the highest payrolls in baseball. If you can't win when your best player's out or any player's out, then you're not a good team to begin with, because a team is meant to win as a team. You shouldn't rely on just one player to win you the games.
If you took Bryce Harper's salary out of the out of consideration, and I think he's making something, what's it, like $29 million, maybe close to $30 million this season, something along those lines. And in fact, actually, it's at a really good price. It's actually even less than I thought. His base salary is $26 million, and then, of course, there is adjusted salaries and luxury tax money that needs to be paid and things like that. But his adjusted salary is less than $28 million. I mean, you cannot beat that for the productivity that he was getting, especially with as more and more and more contracts continue to unfold. His contract looks better and better and better as it rolls down the stretch. But if you take Bryce Harper's, let's say, $28 million off the payroll, the Phillies, everybody else, with their 26, with their injured reserve, with their retained salary, with their buried salary, all of that, right? If you take that $27, $28 million off their payroll, the Phillies still in baseball would have the sixth highest payroll. They would go from fourth to sixth. The only team that would jump them would be the San Diego Padres. They would still be ahead of the only other team in baseball with a $200 million payroll or more, which is the Boston Red Sox, by about $3 to $4 million. So, with that said, you are paying Castellanos all this money. You are paying Schwarber all this money. You are paying Real Muto all of this money. Understanding, you're paying Gregorius a lot of money. Understanding that everybody that I just named, Gregorius, Castellanos, Real Muto, everybody other than Schwarber, I think, and I don't even need to say I think, I know, has underperformed to this point this season. Castellanos has drastically underperformed. JT Realmuto has offensively underperformed, because we talked about his pop time and his caught stealing rate is still really proficient, but offensively has underperformed. We know that Didi Gregorius, we know what Didi Gregorius is. Against right-handed pitching, he is sensational. Against left-handed pitching, he is, well, let's say not, right? And obviously, he had a big go-ahead RBI base hit against the left-handed pitcher in the series with the Marlins. But we know what Didi Gregorius is. But the point is, this team is built to succeed. It is not the whole of one player. It should be the sum of its parts. And the sum of its parts, when you just look at it from a contextual, like, on paper level, should still be good enough, even without Bryce Harper, to compete for at least the foreseeable future.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And even if now Castellanos, I know that he came in here because he thought he was going to primarily DH. Now he might get that opportunity. Even still, if the DH didn't exist, he'd be in the field. The Phillies would be in the same situation they are now, because Bryce wouldn't even be playing this season. But they need to step up and earn their money. Do what they came in here, were brought in here to do. And I know that on the field, Bryce's production is going to be lost. But I know all they have to do, all his teammates have to do, is look at Bryce's reaction after he got hit last night. He wasn't hurt because of the pain. He was pissed off because he wasn't going to be out there. He even said that. He says he feels like he's letting the fans down, letting his team down.
Sure.
He don't care about his thumb. He cares about his teammates. He cares about the fans more than anything. He was fired up. And if they need any sort of motivation, go back and look at that, his reaction to when he got hit. That should show them anything. And I know that he's going to be on the bench as much as he possibly can, because that's just the type of guy he is. He's not going to sit in the training room.
Sure.
So I think, yeah, they need to step up. They need to earn their money, and they need to do this. If they need to do it for Bryce, do it for Bryce.
Am I sad? Yes. Am I disappointed? Absolutely. These things happen. Sports are inherently physical. They're inherently at times can be violent and dangerous, and injury risks happen in every sport. And you can say that we know that baseball, compared to the others, hockey and football specifically, basketball a little less, but still more than baseball. We know that in totality, baseball is not a quote-unquote physical sport, right? And when I say physical, I mean it's not, you know, you're not slamming bodies together, right? It's not a contact sport. But injuries happen just the same. Getting hit with a pitch, getting a liner as a pitcher, like a comebacker as a pitcher, rounding the bases, lunging for the base. Something pops. That's what happened with Manny Machado, right? Lunging for first base, got in a little bit of a tangle, and he had a really bad, you know, ankle injury. And I don't know the extent and how long he's going to be out for that. Sometimes you just throw the baseball. Pop. Happens, right? Baseball, it's not inherently dangerous like some of the other sports, specifically football, but it is not without its risks, and these things happen. Injuries happen. There's a fluke injury. If that pitch is up and middle, right? Like, let's say it's up middle, and Austin Nola has got to go way up to go get it. There's no harm. Umpire ducks out of the way. Austin Nola snags it. See another pitch. That pitch is buried in the dirt. Location slips happen, right? And that was a location slip. I really, truly believe that there was nothing of intent behind that pitch.
I agree.
You know, you look at it, they're not rivals. There wasn't heated exchanges before the game. It's not like those two guys hate each other, at least from what we know. It seemed to be, it was a location slip, and it is unbelievably unfortunate that it caught Bryce Harper in a spot that broke bones and may see him out for a long period of time. But this team, I truly, truly believe that this team is still a contender, even without Harper, with the caveat that I'm going to need some step up from a lot of different guys to different varying levels. You know, a little bit of step up from Bohm and Gregorius and whomever plays center field. A medium level of step up from, let's say, Schwarber, who's been really, really good, maybe just takes it up even a step further. And Hoskins, who's been really good the last month, maybe takes it up a step further. And then there's a big level of step up that I'm expecting from Castellanos and Realmuto. And I know that's expecting a lot, and that may be unfair as a fan and for you as the fan base to say, well, Tyler, you're really hitching your wagons to a lot of expectations and a lot of what ifs. But this team was put together in such a way that I should have those expectations. And if they falter, it's not going to be for lack of having talent. It's going to be for lack of playing poorly. And then we have a whole different conversation to be had. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. We are just getting started here on 97.5 The Fanatic. That is Matt Manarik. I'm Tyler Zulli. On the other side, we do open up our first of a couple side topics today. One does not revolve around baseball. A couple do revolve around baseball. Also, I know that we are about 90 minutes away from first tip with the Union and that team that plays in New Jersey and calls themselves New York. I believe this to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, regular season games and tests for the Union. And we talked a lot about this team needing to find a way to win games at home. This would be a paramount game for them to win at home. So we'll come back. We'll talk about all of that on the other side. We're here until 8 o'clock on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
You know, sometimes you have to force a conversation on the air. You're on for 4 hours. You have, you know, a little bit of some. I'll take you in behind the scenes. Sometimes there's a little bit of lulls, right? Sometimes it just happens. Sometimes you have to force conversations into particular spots. Like, and I don't mean force in like, this has to be here. But when you set up shows, when Matt and I set up the show before the show starts, we kind of have a idea of what we're going to talk about in each hour. So sometimes you are, you kind of fall victim to your own show topics. And sometimes things work out perfectly for you where in between a segment, you're just me and Matt are chatting about something and it plays perfectly into what we're going to talk about next. And that happened during this break because the Angels and the Mariners, there's some hands getting thrown in that game. So I'll try to paint you a word picture as best I can. Wants. I don't know Wants' first name. I don't know the deep dives of their bullpen.
We'll
like
call him Pitcher.
To. Yeah, Pitcher Wants for the LA Angels of Anaheim, of California, of the world. Throws at Jesse Winker. Hits him in the backside. And obviously, I don't know what happened leading up to this, but clearly by Jesse Winker's reaction and him having to be momentarily deterred by multiple umpires and a catcher, something happened leading up to this. Now, I don't know if somebody else was hit and this was a retaliation. I don't know if these two have been feuding before, but this led to benches clearing and a couple of different guys. I thought at first, I'm watching, you know, when you see these pileups, a lot of times it's a lot of pushing and shoving and guys pulling other guys off, you know, out of the pile and things like that. But here comes J.P. Crawford, man. J.P. Crawford over the top with a couple of pretty vicious-looking over-the-top right-hand punches. And then I'm watching this video in further detail, and a couple of coaches start throwing hands at each other. The dugouts pile out. One of the funniest things when you see these big brawls like this are the two bullpens that come pushing down this, you know, they're running from 300 feet out. So sometimes, you know, these things get a little bit out of hand, but it leads me to what we're going to talk about next, because I saw this on Twitter a lot yesterday from a lot of emotionally charged Phillies fans after the Bryce Harper injury. And I understand your immediate reaction was frustration, and I understand that you are watching the best player on your team, maybe the best hitter in the National League, writhing in pain and screaming at Blake Snell and all that as it transpires, right? But one of the things that I have been a big advocate for as of late, way more than I was when I was, you know, growing up, because I just thought that it was how it worked. But as an adult, I understand a little bit more of the intricacies of these things. The unwritten rules of baseball, the unwritten rules of any sport really, but baseball seems to take it to a ridiculous level. The unwritten rules of baseball are so stupid and so antiquated, and I'm so tired of them. This like bravado, machismo, tough guy act where if one of your players gets hit by a pitch, especially like we talked about with Blake Snell, clearly it was a location miss. It wasn't intentional. With Blake Snell, who throws hard, we all know he throws 96, 97, 98 at times, hits Bryce Harper in the hand, he gets hurt, he's going to miss time, and all of a sudden, this like antiquated tough guy routine of, oh man, one of their good players needs to get hit in the ribs their next time up. You got to show them that you're not going to take that. Why? Why? I don't get it. Why? I understand that tempers flare and emotions run high when not only a player on your team gets hit with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, but your best player gets hit with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. I get it. I understand that emotions are running high. But the antiquated way of the whole, you know, unwritten rules of baseball, and they extend further than just a guy getting thrown at and you retaliate by throwing at somebody else. They extend to like a weird level of don't run across the mound and, you know, don't bunt to break up a no-hitter and a whole bunch of different stuff that's just really, really weird to me. Because at the end of the day, I don't know about you, Matt. I know you were a pitcher. I'm sure you may have been maybe faced situations like this at times. At the end of the day, for me, I'm trying to win ball games because I'm not going to feel any better if hey, one of my players got hit. Now I got to throw at one of their guys. Because first and foremost, if I'm on the mound, the return is not going to be the same. I don't throw hard enough. I never did, and I never will. But as if I'm on the mound and one of my guys gets hit, and let's say we're in a position where we may not be winning the game, and you go, all right, throw it this next guy. Why? I'm not putting any more runners on base. That would be stupid. I think that the old school way of thinking, and I know that maybe it's unfair to call it like machismo, bravado, tough guy act, whatever the case may be. Maybe it's a little unfair to say those things. But I just don't get retaliating in that sense. The greatest form of revenge, when one of your players gets hurt, go win the ball game. Just go win the ball game. I don't get it. Now, like I said, Matt, you were a pitcher. I'm sure you were probably at some point in your career put in an unenviable spot like that, where one of your guys gets hit and you kind of get told to retaliate. I don't get it. Do you understand it? Does it work for you? Does it make sense for you?
No.
You don't have to agree with me.
I did a good enough job of putting people on base anyway without having to hit them. But no, I never really hit anybody on purpose. I understand. I mean, some of these unwritten rules, they're old-fashioned. They don't make much sense. And that brawl is what happened, because I have here what the LA Times put out. It says the brawl comes one day after Mike Trout was nearly hit in the head by a Mariners pitcher.
So it was retaliation.
And then in the first inning of this game, Halos pitcher Andrew Wants threw a pitch near the head of Julio Rodriguez in the first inning. And then that's, I guess, later on in the game is when Winker got hit and something was said in a dugout. And then that's how everything just blew up.
And
it was one of the unwritten rules like you're talking about.
Unwritten rule. And that's probably the extreme one. There's other ones that I think are far less confrontational. But they do lead to scraps at times. I have never, ever, ever understood why the unwritten rule of if there's a no-hitter being thrown, you don't bunt for a base hit. I forget the time. I don't know when it happened or when it happens in a particular game that all of a sudden a bunt base hit means less than a base hit that was, you know, a line drive or through the gap or up the middle or whatever the case may be. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but a bunt base hit and a ball that hits off the wall, or you scold at 110 miles an hour and you get a base hit, they're both worth one base?
Yes.
If you get a single, the OPS stays the same.
That is correct.
Base percentage is the same. So they're equitable in terms of how you reach first base.
That is correct.
So why is the bunt base hit considered almost like taboo when a pitcher is throwing a no-hitter or a perfect game?
I guess because I think a hit's a hit. I mean, I
feel the same way. Base hit's a base hit.
I had two one-hitters in my life, and one of them wasn't a no-hitter because of a bunt base hit.
Okay.
Whatever. He beat it out by a foot. But still, I mean, a bunt base hit, whether they have 10 hits in the game or zero hits in the game, you still should be able to field and get the guy out.
Sure.
Right? So if he beats it out, that's still on you guys.
Sure. Absolutely. And we were talking last week about wins not being maybe not as nearly as reputable as a pitcher stat as maybe they once were. The way that a game like transcribes or the way that it happens throughout the course of the game, like you just said, if you win a game 1-0, we watched a team earlier this year get no hit and win the baseball game. It happened. Baseball is a weird sport. I can't stress that enough. You and I have talked about all the weird things that have happened in this sport, you know, over the last couple of weeks and over the course of the season and over the course of baseball history. The New York Yankees, the last 24 hours, were no hit for 16 consecutive innings. 16 consecutive innings. They are the best team in baseball, record-wise, the best team in baseball. They are currently in the top of the 10th with an opportunity to win the game today. after being no hit through six innings and getting no hit last night. Baseball's a weird sport. I have no understanding, and I don't think I ever will anymore. Especially being in this seat and in that seat that you're in, Matt, and looking at it from more of an observing view as opposed to being on the field in any capacity. I don't get the unwritten rule thing. And it goes further than just the tough guy act. But the tough guy act when you're retaliating is the one that gets noticed the most because it clears benches. And here's the thing. With what we just saw with the Angels and the Mariners. So Mike Trout has a ball go up near his head. Nobody likes that. As a hitter, you don't like that. And most of the time, as a pitcher, you don't like doing that. I don't know about you, but I didn't have any intention of hurting anybody when I took the mound. I had intention of getting people out. Didn't happen often. It wasn't very good. But the point was, my intention was not to go up there and throw you know, fastballs at guys' domes. It was to go up there and throw fastballs to get a fly out or a ground ball. So I would assume, without having total knowledge of the situation, that the fastball that went up near Mike Trout's head, while scary and unenjoyable, was probably also unintentional. And that to me is the big one. But in totality, the whole unwritten rules thing just, it doesn't fly with me. And I am somebody who was very, very superstitious. And I had a routine and I stuck to my routine to the point where at one time I legitimately on the field screamed at a teammate, like bellowed at him because he was playing first or second or whatever it was. And he ran up, scooped the ball up and flipped it to me. There was no harm in it. But my thing was, don't touch my baseball. And that's not an unwritten rule. That was just me being a weirdo. And so I understand what it's like to be superstitious and have your routines and things like that, but they don't need to transcend to throwing at guys or retaliating at throwing at guys, or even to a lesser extent, the whole, you know, you don't steal when you're up big, or you don't bunt for a base hit with a no hitter, or whatever it is. I just never felt comfortable with the unwritten rules thing. And it seems to be almost talked about more and more because I think teams are more hesitant to retaliate. I think teams are, like, you've seen Gabe Kapler multiple times this season have to explain himself for no reason in particular because they were trying to score more runs. And the justification that he gave, I think, was a perfect one. If we're up 8-0 and we're heading into the bottom of the 8th inning and we're up 8-0 and I don't tack on a run and you somehow have a miraculous comeback and score 9 runs, now I got to go hit again. Now I got to go figure out my bullpen stuff. Now I have an opportunity to maybe lose this game. I have no issue with a team scoring more runs. No issue with a team, you know, scoring more points in the NBA. Now, I'm not saying leave your starters in. Now, I know it's different in baseball because you only have a select amount of guys off the bench and you can't re-enter as a substitute, you know, once you're out of the game. In, like, let's say the NBA, for example, put Joel Embiid on the bench, put Tyrese Maxey on the bench, put Tobias Harris on the bench, put James Harden on the bench. But if your defense can't stop Paul Reed and Charles Bassey and George Niang and all those guys, that's your fault. We're not going to run, you know, transition breakout offense and you know, go fast break, hammer home dunks and things like that. That's not what I'm saying. But if we're moving the ball around and we find an interior feed and you can't stop a layup, that's on you. The whole, like, and so I think that it transcends sports, but baseball more than anything else has the weirdness of the unwritten rule.
Yeah, like, if you're up big, don't swing at a 3-0 count.
If you're going to put the ball on a tee for me, I'm going to go after it.
Didn't, I think it was last year, Fernando Tatis, he kind of ridiculously swung out of the strike zone and hit like a grand slam or a home run.
It was something like that, yeah.
Yeah, there are some really weird ones. Like, if don't steal a base if the count is like 3-0. What about the old don't step on the chalk?
See, that's a superstition thing.
Yeah,
that's not going to cause, you know, bench clearing brawls. You know what I mean? Like, I am somebody. I went and played.
Somebody might like the chalk. You never know.
I went and played in a work league softball game a couple weeks ago. And I still did. I was playing left field, and every time I came in and out of the dugout, I did that little hop thing, right? So I would stop just short of the line, put my foot on the one side of the line, and like scoot over
the little sideways hop.
Yeah, little sideways jump. That's just something I've always done. I played outfield my entire life. It's just something I've always done, going out to my position, whether it was left or right field, and you know, that's a superstition thing. I'm not going to get in a fight because I scuffed up the line. But the whole, I know that I'm kind of like harping on this at this point, but I don't see any value in retaliating and throwing at somebody. Because now, look at what happened, like we were just talking about, in Seattle and LA. You know how many guys are going to get suspended for that, bro? J.P. Crawford's definitely getting suspended. No doubt about it. The pitcher is going to get suspended. Winker's going to get suspended for inciting the fight. The managers probably are both going to get suspended, because usually that's what happens, is the managers get a game. And they're going to go through that video, and everybody that's in that pile, they're going to have to figure out, are they pulling guys out or are they throwing guys in? A lot of guys are going to get suspended for this fight. And it didn't need to happen.
No. Trout did the right thing, because we zoomed in on him to see what he was doing. He was pulling people off.
Right.
Yeah.
But the fight didn't need to happen. Because the throw at Winker didn't need to happen. Because, again, I didn't see the pitch, but I would imagine 99.9% of pitchers, when you're throwing up and in, are throwing to brush back. They're throwing a two-seamer that runs back. 99.9% of the time, you are not running fastballs up by guys' heads intentionally. Because that would be, that in and of itself is probably a suspendable offense. If the league finds out that you're intentionally throwing fastballs up around guys' faces, you're going to get suspended for that too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And like you say, you're giving them, if you hit the person, you're giving them an extra base, okay? Giving them free admission to the base. I mean, that's like an unintentional, intentional walk that they might have a little bit of a bruise. But yeah, you're giving them first base. And if there's already a guy on the base pass, then you're having two people on base at least, for just because you want to be a tough guy.
Sure. So I want to ask, I know it's a little bit off topic, well, not off topic, but what's the unwritten sports rule that drives you the craziest? Because for me, it's the retaliation pitch, the throwing at somebody to be a tough guy, like you were just talking about, Matt. So 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. I think maybe we'll incorporate some FanFest tickets with this conversation or with the movie conversation. Me and Matt will decide during the break. We do have two pairs of FanFest tickets to give away. We'll tell you more about it in the 5:30 segment as we continue today's show. But I want to ask you, and I'll get your answer on the other side of the break, Matt. It could be any sport. What is the unwritten rule of sports that you cannot stand? Because for me, it is the retaliation pitch after one of your key players gets hit in an at-bat. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. That's Matt Manark. I'm Tyler Zulli as we take you until 8 o'clock tonight here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.